Hi, this is Heaton Shaw.
And this is Sally Efty. And in today's episode, we're going to talk about culture.
I think we like talking about more than just sales and marketing.
We just want to bullshit and chat about business and life. And hopefully, while we're doing that, provide a lot of value to people.
The world's best business podcast.
Oh, shit. We got it.
For people trying to get shit done.
Yeah. We don't want to give you feedback that's bullshit.
Yeah, we want you to do your best.
Company culture, startup culture. What is it? How do you intentionally design it? How can you be more aware of what it is? And lots of other goodies. The reason why we want to talk about this is that, Heaton, you just recently secretly announced to kind of more of an inner circle that you're going to start a culture newsletter, right? You have a really popular, super famous, and very, very valuable SaaS newsletter where once a week you send out the most valuable links around SaaS topics to people, and I'm a subscriber, and I love that newsletter. And now you're going to do the same thing all around the topic of culture. And I thought that was both awesome and fascinating, and probably more than good enough of a reason for us to talk about this. But before we jump into the episode, for people that are instantly like, yes, culture, I want to learn more about it, I want to become better at it, I want Heaton's curated links around this topic, just for our listeners, where can they subscribe to this?
Yeah, if you go to bit.ly/culturegood, CulturegoOod, you'll be able to get early access. It's just a type form, and we do ask some questions about your culture. It's pretty short, but that's the early access link. What I actually did is I shared it by telling a quick kind of story about why I care about culture in my newsletter. That newsletter is up to about, it's over 10,000 emails. It's quite a bit over. And so I sent it to that. And then I actually, you know, I'm sure our listeners will find this curious. I hadn't played with Facebook's notes functionality, but it's like their blogging or writing platform on Facebook. So it was a great opportunity to just copy and paste it, because it wasn't, I didn't think my message was blog post worthy, but I thought it was, you know, personable, right? Because I wrote a lot about like why I cared about culture, which is basically I'm obsessed with it. And company culture specifically. And so I just put it on there. And it turns out that Facebook does like those notes. And the cool thing is when you go see my post, it's like a really slick, like built into Facebook, like blog. And it looks, and it's like really quick and efficient to like read it. And so anyways, I experimented with that. So I did it in my newsletter, which goes out on Monday morning. And then I did it on Facebook. And you know, there's hundreds of people on the list now. Yeah, I'm looking forward to launching this. This is also just, again, the listeners love stuff like this, but if there was only 10 people, I probably wouldn't be doing this at all, right? But it turns out that this is a topic a lot of people care about. I've done some research with my business partner and a few other people that I'm working with on this, and we knew it was a big topic. We just didn't know if one central place about company culture would make sense. And it turns out there isn't a place we've been able to find, but yet companies are putting out content talking about their culture, and I'm joking about this, but the ping pong tables in the office and, you know, the sugarless soda and all that good stuff. But there isn't really a centralized place that talks about this. And then you can even look at sites like TechCrunch and Mashable and a bunch of these sites. There's a lot of negative stuff about company culture as well. Like, I think a lot of stuff came out about Zenefits and how their culture might have led to the problems that they had. And you know, when there's always a negative thing, people come out of the woodwork and start talking a lot more about, like, for example, the parties and the beer cans in the stairways and all that kind of stuff. So it's a big topic. Company culture is really important in every business that I've ever been privy to. Even a 2 or 3 person team, there ends up being some kind of culture, even if nobody's really thinking about it. So yeah, I'm super excited about the topic and kind of pumped that like so many people are interested in sort of what we're doing with it.
Yeah, I love it. And I was just checking out the note, and it's good that you're bringing this up. Last time I published a Facebook note is many years ago, and it looks totally different today. So this is interesting. But the topic of culture is such a powerful one for so many different reasons. So, and I'll just give a quick example of something that happened recently, and then let's try to demystify and debullshit and figure out what is it and how do you practically use and work and create it. But we use a tool called Know Your Company internally, since we're a remote team. And basically what it does is kind of twice twice a week, it sends an email to everybody and they can just reply with that email, and it takes all the answers and kind of beautifully curates it and shares it with the team. But it also, from a founder's perspective, gives us some analytics and some like ideas of what's going on in the company, how people feel about things. Mondays is always the same questions, like, what was your high and low point of last week? And what is the thing you really are excited about getting done this week, right? But then on Thursdays, it's different questions, and the team can suggest questions. People can come up with questions. One question that was asked last week was, you know, when you're around friends and family and people that don't work at Close.io and you talk about the company, what's the one thing you always brag about? What's the one thing that you talk about with the most pride and most excitement? And it was really interesting to see how every single person in the company, this was not coordinated, right? But every single person in the company answered that question with a version of the people and the culture of the business.
That's awesome.
Which was pretty awesome to see.
And did you say you're using Know Your Company for this?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, cool. So you guys are customers.
Yes, we're customers of it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Cool. We were using that product for a while too at Kissmetrics when I was over there, and I really liked it. It felt really good. One thing I hit on, which I just want to talk about this for a quick second, but we had this problem with company surveys as well, and I can tell you how we solved it, because basically Know Your Company is essentially company surveying, right? It's asked your company questions about 3 times a week, I believe, and there are different questions except the Monday one. And what we noticed is that after some time, there was a lot of drop off in the survey responses. So if in the beginning you had like 80-90% of the company, we ended up having like 40-50%. But the company started growing too. And then we made some changes to fix that. So I'm just curious what your experience has been.
So our participation rates, I would say, have been pretty steady. There are some people in the team that kind of answer all questions at all times, and there's some people that very rarely do.
Yeah.
So for us, from day one, we didn't, the default setup is 3 emails a week, and we from day one knew that we thought that would be too much, so we only wanted to have 2.
Yeah.
We also experimented with like what those questions are, especially the one that's repetitive, the Monday question, to make it like both simple to answer but useful.
Valuable.
And at first it was like, what's the one thing you're going to do to make our customers more successful? And what's the one thing you can do to get us more successful customers? And what did you work on this week? And so we had some various successes in response to that. The one that we have now with the share a high and low of last week and asking that question Monday morning, that is seem to be really useful, easy for people to answer, but it still kind of gives you an idea of where people are. And it gives people a lot of things to converse about. So when I chat with people, they know that I still can't, go to kickboxing class because of my knee, and they'll bring it up, even people that I don't interact with a lot, because they see this in the survey. The way we're trying to get engagement high is by experimenting with a question, by not making this too much, and by we have somebody on the team that will ping people occasionally that never respond or respond really rarely, and ask them why, and ask them if they would next week. So we're trying to, we're hustling people a little bit. That's kind of what the current status is.
So what we figured out, because we were doing surveying like this, we were doing about biweekly and monthly, in the newsletter and stuff, we're going to be sharing a lot of stuff like that too. But I'll preempt it right now and tell you what we did, and we really fixed it. And I think a low participation rate is a problem, the way I think about it. And anything less than 100, I'm like, what's up? Like, let's figure this out. So I love that you guys are hustling it in, you know, Close.io style. But the thing I would say is these things aren't just surveys so people can fill crap out, right? What they are is they're meant to actually help everyone understand what's going on in the company and actually improve the culture. So what we started doing is, in a lot of our non-surveying or non-like culture-specific communications, we started bringing up the things that we heard in the culture, sort of in any of the culture surveys. So it was like reinforcement. So in our all hands, we would bring up things that we saw in the surveys, and we would talk to the team members about the things that they said in the survey. So then people started getting a sense that if they filled this out, then there's actually exposure. There's things that happen that actually impact the company. So simple things are like, we started making sure there was always a weekly question or a monthly question that was designed around what are the problems? How can we make our jobs better? How can we make our lives better? How can we make our customers' lives better? And when we found great nuggets in there, we'd actually highlight those and talk about what we as a team, oftentimes it's, you know, for lack of a better word, leadership team or founders or executives or whatever that are sort of in charge of making changes or at least incepting a lot of changes in the company. That's just the way companies work, fortunately or unfortunately, unless you're a flat company, which is really rare and usually doesn't work as you scale. So what happens is we just started reinforcing things and we started making sure that people knew that when they brought something up, it actually got addressed and it was in a positive way and in a way where it was reinforced. Because I think we forget that we're not just asking people questions. We're actually trying to impact and improve and evolve the culture.
Yeah, so I think we're knee deep in the culture discussion already. And I love that approach of making sure that the answers to these questions are embedded and highlighted in more conversations and have more obvious impact and influence in order to stimulate more participation in them. So I love that. I think that's really powerful. So let's hit the pause button for a second and try to distill in a very simple way what is company culture. Because what it isn't, and we already agree on this, is the surface level bullshit like ping pong tables and free Red Bulls and I don't know what the fuck, like all these perks, right? There's a lot of benefits and perks that seem cool, especially in the startup world, especially in Silicon Valley. And not to say that you don't want to have, like, ping pong tables are not allowed or an evil thing. They're irrelevant, right? They can be fun. It's all cool. But putting a ping pong table somewhere and having free drinks and snacks, that is not creating a culture. And that's, as a founder, not the end of the culture question that you have to deal with. Well, what kind of snacks are we going to offer? It's going to be these and these brands. Cool. Well, culture's checked off. What else do we need to work on, right? So we know that it's not that stuff. And a lot of times, I think people confuse that surface level perks for culture and equate it for it. But what is company? What is the company culture? How do we define that?
So we both spoke at Culture Summit last year.
Yep.
And I was really grappling with this. I think you gave me some advice on my talk, so I had more fucks and shits on it. But thanks for the advice. I think I did well.
Always welcome.
You'll get a video of my embarrassing talk that Steli incepted in me if you sign up for the early access.
By the way, this was the best talk you've ever given in your life. Not saying
that's anything. That's why I'm sharing it. That's literally a special thing you get if you sign up. So yes, I know. I just had to watch myself again on it, and I'm like, I could do so much better. Anyways, thank you for everything you did there because it was really helpful. I think it was one of my best talks up till that day. I have a slide in there that says, what is culture? And I struggled with it because I couldn't figure it out and nobody could give me an answer because it was just all either fluffy or like stale. And it was culture about like religion and stuff like that. So I came to the conclusion after much discussion with a few people that I've worked with and who are obsessed with culture too. And the definition I got was great culture is the elimination of all friction. And then I looked up friction. So let me continue for a second. And it says, what is friction? So what is friction, right? If culture is elimination of all friction, we need to know what friction is. So friction is dissension or conflict between persons because of differing ideas, wishes, etc. So what you're trying to do essentially, what culture is the way that, what I would say is that, especially from a company standpoint, it's the way that you make sure people get along and don't have friction, because friction stops work. Friction prevents the work from happening, which is really, in a business, it's about servicing customers. So anything that's happening internally that's a conflict that is, causing enough friction that work's not getting done, that definitely is sort of how you can think about what culture really is. It's all those things you do to eliminate friction.
I love it. To me, this makes a lot of sense answering the question, what is the impact of good culture or what is the result of cultural problems or frictions within the company, right?
Right.
We talked about this a little bit of like a lot of times there's problems that arise at the surface, teams not communicating well, deadlines not being kept, work not being done, people being unhappy at work. And when you try to solve these problems on the surface level, you might be like just, you know, pedaling upstream in a battle that you can't win, versus stopping, stepping back, and realizing that if you go really deep, a lot of times there's cultural issues. You've brought people together. Either you brought people together that don't align on their core values, on the core way they communicate, on their humor, on their ambition, on their ethics. And those misalignments in kind of personal value systems are clashing and creating friction in the company. Or/and you have allowed some people into the company that have a style and a value system that creates a lot of that poisons the well, so to speak, that creates a lot of us against them, a lot of aggressions, a lot of politics, a lot of bad mouthing and behind the closed doors, click building type of stuff. And that can slowly but surely create a really hostile environment in the company, and one where work just doesn't get done anymore. So making sure that that you both bring the right people together, and that when you hire people, I think that's where it starts. I think it starts by understanding your own values and who you are, and if you have co-founders, who they are truly, what do we stand for, who are we, what type of people are we, and then making sure that you bring in people that don't necessarily have to be the same type of people, but need to share some core values to be able to start building and creating a cohesive culture. And I like that we point to this episode a lot because it's a really important episode that we recorded, which is episode number 76, Startup Team Alignment. I think alignment and culture are, you know, one of the same things. If you have cultural problems, it's typically that people are not aligned and not on the same page on things.
Agreed. Yeah. I mean, I think alignment is the solution. It's definitely a solution. Or a way to think about the solution to some of these problems, for sure.
So my sense is when I think about all the startup teams that I have met, and even the founding teams, but also kind of the entire companies, my sense is that a lot of companies, a lot of teams are not really in tune with their own culture. And not really, they could not potentially articulate their own culture very clearly if you asked them to. Like people tend to say things like, you know, we're really casual, we're really cool, we like to make a lot of fun, we're hardworking and hard charging, but we're also kind of all friends. And they say things that are so broad that they are meaningless. Like, I still don't have any idea of who you guys are, if that's the way you describe your culture. Or, you know, we are hardworking, but still take it easy. Like, what does that mean? That means nothing. And I feel that a lot of times people, especially as the company grows, they have a harder and harder time to really place their finger on, how do I describe our culture? What is it? Would you agree with me? And if so, why is it a thing that's so invisible, so hard for people to grasp? Even on the founding or executive level, people not having a good sense for even their own company culture.
Yeah, not everyone is in tune with other people. This culture thing and all this stuff, it has a lot to do with how you think about other people, how you think about relationships, how you think about like dynamics of a company, and how people work together. And if you're pretty dry about it and say, well, we just do the work, right? Then you're going to have pretty dry values. So it's like, well, we just do the work. And, you know, sometimes we go out and have some fun. So our value should be do work, but have fun. Okay. Well, what does that really mean? Like you said, like, it's just a generic statement. If you can't, basically a lot of this has to do with how should you come up with company values and things like that, you know? And for me, like, it has everything to do with, like, as a founder, as an executive, as even a team member in a company, are you actually conscious of the things that are causing people to not work, causing drama in your company, right? And are you actually aware of how these things work and how your values help eliminate those things that are negative inside of the company, right? And that's why, like, you don't see, like, two companies that are exactly the same, because – they don't all have the same values, and you have a group of people coming together towards a common goal, right? Oftentimes, even like in a tribe or old school style, like in a cult or a religious like group, you have a common goal, right? A lot of times it's just salvation or something like that, you know, but in a company, it's a common goal towards essentially making more money, right? And servicing customers to make more money so that you can all have this sort of community that you're spending, you know, 8+ hours a day with. And I think that what happens is like we just start these businesses just thinking about business. We don't start these businesses thinking that there's people we're going to have to hire and there's a whole organic sort of culture that develops, right? And now with like remote teams, smaller teams, more competition, anything generic from a value set standpoint or values, missions, vision, stuff like that ends up not helping you grow your company. And I think a lot of this is really just about like, how do you want to think about growing your company? You know, you can't do it with the same amount of people that you have today in most cases, unless you're probably one of my companies. We try really hard to make sure we don't grow the team these days, but that's a different story. But one of the reasons is this cultural thing, right? Like the more people there are, the more there is a chance that the culture gets impacted in a negative way that isn't aligned with the company. So when you have values that are generic, basically everybody's opting into them. And when you have values that are very specific, you can say that, look, there's people that won't agree with this and they should not be at this company. So you can't come up with things that like everyone agrees with. Like everyone, meaning everyone on the planet or most people that would join your company, you have to have an opinion in these values. So I think people are just not conscious of like what's really going on inside their companies and how these how the values help them sort of, you know, evolve the culture. And I think the best thing you can say is usually what happens is, and this just happened in one of the chat groups I'm in, somebody said that, oh, the first team member in my company just left. Like the first team member ever in the company just left. This is like a small company under 10 people. And he's like, right away, I just had to walk away and start crying. And this is the founder. And so I think it's that crying moment, you know, that moment where you're like, oh, somebody who is a great culture fit or somebody who's a great fit in the company, even if you're not thinking about culture, they decided to leave. And then you start really thinking about this. I mean, this is what happened to me, right? The first time that somebody actually left, right, or even gave that hint, I was like, oh, damn. What do we do wrong? Like we wanted this person. This person has been great for the company. And you know, every time, once they leave, everything's fine. It's not a problem, right? That's what culture is about. As long as it's not like three people and one leaves, right? Then you have bigger drama,
yeah.
Right? And I've had that happen over and over again just because it happens. Like not everyone's a good fit for your culture. And sometimes people stay for a long time and appear to be a great fit and then they're not. Or something changes in their lives, right? And you don't know. And they need to leave. But at the same time, you're always wondering, what did I do? One of the CEOs at Kissmetrics once told me, like once a lot of people started leaving, do my feet smell? And that's probably a good way to describe like this problem, which is like, yeah, your feet smell, dude. Like people want to leave, right? Like why are you asking me that? It's like five people just left. Like obviously something's wrong.
Something's
with your
wrong. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But like, I think that's the moment that people really realize it. And I hope that people that are listening don't need to get to that moment to start thinking about this stuff in a very specific and sort of smart way and not do these generic things. Even like ping pong tables or giving your team lunch, right, in the office every day and paying for it. Those are just things other companies have figured out they should do to reduce the friction in the company of getting work done. They aren't necessarily things that every company should do. And the same goes with these generic values, right? Like, yeah, we should all work hard and play hard, like for sure. How about like if it were my company, I'd be like work and play. Don't. There's no difference between work and play. Now that's a value, but that's a value where some people are like no. I want to work and then I want to play, right? But if you say there's no difference between work and play and you don't believe in that, then you shouldn't be at the company that has that value.
Yeah. All right. So there's a lot in here, right? I think that for me, obviously, it would be beautiful. If people didn't have to go through some of the really painful experiences to realize the importance of culture and take ownership of the culture. I see a lot of like blaming around, especially even founders where they start that company, they're not aware of the culture, but they have a cohesive culture with their co-founders maybe. And then a year or two into the company, they've grown, they hired 30, 40 people, and now they don't like the company anymore. They work for, they've built, they come to work and they don't like the people they're working with. And they start complaining about these people and they start bitching and moaning how everything sucks and people suck and this sucks and that sucks. Not realizing that the root of the company growing in a way that they don't like anymore is that they didn't cultivate and curate and work on the culture, and they didn't take culture and culture fit into consideration as they were hiring these people. And now they're in a really kind of troublesome place. For some people, it's when good people leave. For some people, it's when the company grows into a place they don't enjoy working at anymore. For me, I think I always thought culture is just bullshit and things that people like to fuck around with because they don't want to really get the work done, right? Like ping pong tables and free snacks. I was like, fuck this, just get the work done. And but then I when my first startup in the Valley crashed and burned, and I was